What I despise about anxiety and these neurological challenges for kids is it's not just the bad that comes from them. It's the good that the child misses out on because of them. It's the good that the world misses out on, because what anxiety causes is withdrawal. What anxiety causes is, if all of this is going to stress me out and I can't overcome it and I can't get through it, I'm not going to go towards it. Welcome to the Experience Miracles podcast, where we help parents find hope, answers, and drug-free help to overcome your child's chronic health challenges. I'm your host, Dr. Tony Ebel, and I'll be sharing my experiences as both a dad and a doctor on every episode. I can take the latest science and neurology of healing and break it down in the most simple and relatable way possible. We'll take on the toughest topics and answer your biggest questions through interviews with other amazing parents and leading experts, leaving you with practical action steps that you can take to help your child heal and thrive. It's time to expect and experience miracles. Let's get started. All right, everybody out there tuning in to another solo deep dive episode of the Experience Miracles podcast. And when it's just me and I say deep dive, that means we're going to take a condition that way too many kids are struggling with. And actually, with this conversation about anxiety, we cannot relegate this conversation just to kids. We are going to go really deep into a specific age group called teenagers and young adults who are just being absolutely run over by this anxiety epidemic. And we're really going to get into that. But it's all of us. I've never seen a generation of parents so anxious. I actually, doing the research for this deep dive episode, I learned about that anxiety is exploding in elderly as well. And there's just anxiety everywhere you look. I never, ever clinically, I've been in practice for 16 years as of recording this. And heck yes, we've always served kids, young adults and college students. Obviously, that was kind of the age group that you would start to expect to run into more anxiety. Anxiety, depression, emotional dysregulation, sort of challenges coming in on paperwork for those kids of that age and that season of life. But now we see it with three-year-olds. Now we see it with preschoolers. Now we see it with kindergartners. Now we see anxiety taking over kids before they even begin their school journey. And we're going to do a deep dive episode, which means this. I'm going to get into the thick of the problem. We're going to go through the stats. We're going to go through the reality. I'm going to actually share a couple of stories to kick us off that sadly will really paint the picture of, and just these two or three stories I'm going to go through, they're very analogous to their context and the take-home points you're going to be able to learn from this episode. We could go through thousands of the same scenarios that are happening for millions of kids all over the world today, where they end up facing these scenarios, or we in culture, we in society end up being exposed to this anxiety epidemic, this anxious generation that is there right now. And we look at it and it's heartbreaking and it's just really gets to us. And we go, what the heck is happening? That's this episode. We're going to then go from the stats and the stories that paint the picture of the real life challenges that anxiety brings forth for millions of families. And then we're going to get into what we always do, unlike anywhere else. There is no podcast that will address the root causes of these challenges in your kids like we do here. And here's why I say that. I just want to give you one more. I'm also going to go backwards to go forward. I'm going to tell you what the Experience Miracles podcast does that nobody else does. We're going to get into the science, but we're not only going to look at research studies and neurophysiology and genetics and all these different things. I'm going to do that. This will be the nerdiest deep dive podcast on anxiety ever. But, and I usually don't like the word but this one is important. But we're not going to overcomplicate it for you, and we're not going to miss anything either. What I find when people talk about autism and they talk about ADHD and they talk about anxiety and they do deep dive scientific investigations, they either A, only address it from a scientific perspective and not an actual, what I would term, practice-based and real life perspective. So God's journey for me as the main host of this podcast is I'm not just a science nerd. I have spent my whole life loving science and reading research and interpreting it. And my brain can go there. But I'm also a dad and I'm a doctor who has been in practice, taking care of kids and families, really living, struggling first, thriving later. And we'll make that transition with this podcast for you. We'll tell you exactly the steps to go from struggling with anxiety with your family to thriving and being to the other side of it without drugs. And I've been blessed to do that thousands of times, to guide and support and adjust and take care of kids and families and take them on that transformative journey. And the lessons learned there matter most for you. And that's what I want to let you know. Not every doctor out there, not every podcast host or expert out there can dance those three dances all at the same time. The scientific investigation part, the real life taking care of patients in practice, because here's the dichotomy there. I'll come back to the third, which is actually the most important, my dad perspective. But the dichotomy is this: most people who study and know research, they do research, they live in the lab, you know, the Stanfords, the Harvards, the Princetons, the neuroscience labs. Those are brilliant humans who live their whole life in a lab. And what people living in labs try to do is replicate real life. But real life is a whole lot more complicated than even the most advanced laboratories and studies could ever show us. If research studies truly had given us all the answers about autism and anxiety and ADHD and asthma and allergies and so forth, well, then this podcast wouldn't be needed, because you'd already have those answers. Because trillions of dollars of research has been spent on anxiety by medical companies, pharmaceutical companies, universities, and so forth, and yet it is on the rise like never before. So the lab has not given us all the answers. It's going to give us some, and we're going to go there here. Practice is where you really, if you are the kind of doctor who does this, which is the doctor you must have on your team, the kind of doctor who actually, actively, intentionally, and completely listens to their patients. And so what we do differently in our kind of doctoring is we don't just pretend to go after the root cause. We obsessively, relentlessly go after the root cause. And we are well aware of this reality. You don't find it in research papers only. You find it by listening to those moms and listening to those dads, and in this case, really listening to those teenagers, those grade schoolers, those young adults, listening to the kid if they qualify by age as that qualifier, and listening to them, and you go all the way back into their story. And so in the middle of this podcast, when we get into the neuroscience, we're immediately going to thread that neuroscience into real life case histories. And we'll go through one or two, including my homie Hannah, and we'll share her case, and it'll really paint the picture of what's actually really fully causing anxiety. And I don't mean to be over the top annoying with this podcast where I use 3, 4, 5 descriptors to say one word, but you need those, because what I see still today is everybody is looking at these things, including anxiety, on their or from their own island or their own silo, is kind of how the phrase goes. And they get a lot of information. In fact, I love and appreciate the people that live in the lab and live in the silo, because that allows them, their lack of perspective elsewhere allows them to go so deep in their one place that we can grab that information, combine it with our information and our experience. That's why this is called the Experience Miracles Podcast, because we experience them in practice all day, every day, drug-free, without pharmaceuticals, and we address the root cause, and it is our job and obligation that God has called us to share that with you. And it's also my job to make sure that I take this deep dive information I've learned myself from the science and my obsession there, from my practice and my blessing to serve there, and apply it to my most important job, the same one you all have as a parent, as a dad. And so I have a 16-year-old daughter, a 14-year-old son, a 12-year-old, they are called tweens, I believe, and a 9-year-old little Spitfire named Tiny as well. So 3 girls, 1 son, and this is me coming to you on this deep dive episode as a dad as well, walking this journey walking this challenge alongside you. And I will tell you this about facing the greatest challenges in our lives and our kids as well. Actually, this is one of the biggest take-homes from how we address anxiety is we have to address it head on. We have to address challenges. We have to address obstacles. We have to address adversity because when we want everything to be easy, we actually take the path that almost guarantees anxiety. So I will tell you, my job as a research nerd, scientist loving guy, piece of cake compared to taking care of patients and being a neurologically focused pediatric chiropractor. Now that job, I love that job. That job is remarkably easy as compared to being a dad. Okay. So I want you all to smile out there. I want you all to take a deep breath. Remember, we're addressing anxiety with this. So maybe a little bit of breathing, a little bit of diaphragmatic action to activate our parasympathetic nervous system would be a good thing for us as we sit back and learn on this. But just smile, take a deep breath, and realize it's hard. But I also want to bring that thread all the way out. The way God designed us and the way the world works, and we all know this. These are some cliche things, if you will, I am addressing in the introduction of this. And you got to fall in love with this because when you do, you figure out the path through. But on the other side of adversity is resilience and adaptability. And when we get to that, when we learn to be resilient, when we learn to be adaptable, when we learn to be able to calm and regulate our nervous systems right in the thick of the freaking storm, guess who learns that from us? Our kids. So in a couple of minutes, I'm going to go through the statistics of anxiety's dramatic rise in our kids. But let's not leave ourselves out of this episode. If we are dealing with anxiety, if we are struggling with anxiety, and especially if we don't know the path through to the other side of anxiety, well, then our kids are going to have a hard time finding that path as well. So please know that this one kicks off with probably the highest amount of compassion and empathy and relatability I could ever put into a podcast episode. And I just ask you to do this. Trust me on this one. This is going to be an hour and probably some change on this episode, and I will get you the explanations and the answers as to what's really causing anxiety in a more complete and make more simple sense way than anybody else out there. And then I'll get you to the strategies and the drug-free action steps that will get your kids, get your family, maybe even get you through to the other side of this. So if you feel like you have tried everything to get your child or your anxiety better, you have exhausted the prescription medication list, the Zolofts and everything in between, and you know that traditional medicine must be missing something because you've done everything and not seen long-lasting, complete results, then this podcast episode is for you. But it's also for you if you have tried to address your child or your own anxiety through every natural, integrative, functional, holistic, homeopathic, herbal remedy out there. If you have taken copious amounts of magnesium and melatonin and downloaded every single meditation app and taken your child to a counselor, to yoga class, to walks in nature barefoot, if you have installed an infrared sauna that you walk out of and must submerge yourself into a cold plunge while, you know, channeling and humming, and I'm running this one out deeply because awesomely, the world is waking up to this pandemic of stress and anxiety and emotional dysregulation and ADHD and depression. And so we finally, the way I kind of feel, because I've been having this conversation my whole career, we are finally starting to understand that the nervous system is the boss. And when the nervous system goes haywire, then these things come full throttle. Anxiety perhaps being the leading one. And so we're trying with our supplements and our vitamins and our diet changes and our detoxes and our cold plunges. And you are doing some amazing things if you've installed meditation and downtime, especially we're going to talk about screens and technology in this one in a big way. And I bet you're fighting your ass off to win this anxiety battle with your teen, with your family, and with yourself. And you feel like you haven't won yet, despite investing thousands of dollars and following every Instagram influencer, blogger, and natural health guru out there, that means this podcast is for you more than anyone else out there, because there is something else. That innate parental human gut instinct that says, dang it, I freaking tried everything, pharmaceutical and natural. What else is there? I'm here to tell you exactly what that is. All right. So just setting the story, setting the frame a little bit. So 16 years into practice, love me job quite a bit, a lot, but obsessively. People probably think it's quite, and I wish this into existence forever, but my prayer is that everyone could love their job and their purpose and their passion as much as they do. In fact, calling it a job is the weirdest word ever for me. So anytime there's a career day at the local, at my kid's school or the local high schools, anybody who asks me to come into career day, I am coming in positive, you know, life-changing, guns a-blazing, all right? And so I've done this for years. A little bit of a break because with COVID, you know, anyways. So they shut down that for a couple of years, and they just brought it back to life in this last year or two around the local high schools here. So my incredible mentor, Dr. Cody, you'll hear his name all the time on this podcast because he taught me so much. His family, his sister, and a lot of his family, they are high school teachers. They are rock stars. They are saviors of that world here for many years. And they invite me in to do that again this year. And if I could turn one more kid into a neurologically focused pediatric chiropractor, I'm all about it. In fact, I'm going for 10 every time I go in there, because we have a major gap in how many people need our care and how many of us are there. In fact, I plan to make that gap a big deal and try to change the world to get more kids to chiropractic school. We've successfully sent 86 of them so far. All right, so here's the story at Career Day. I got a podcast, you know, and maybe you're watching on YouTube and you can see I'm pretty animated, or you watch some of our Instagram stuff and everything else. I can get after it in talking in public. Not my first rodeo. You know, I like to think my dad jokes are pretty legit. I can pretty much ebb and flow with any audience and have some fun and get some engagement out of it, except for teenagers of today's generation. Good Lord, it was hard. So what happened? I went in there. We had three sessions. These are kids who signed up that they were interested in what we were going to be talking about, healthcare and chiropractic and all these other sort of things. And so we technically, by the way this sucker was set up, we should have had an interested, engaged audience. They signed up to show up. Yes, the whole career day is mandatory, but at least they got to pick their track. And here's the funky thing. Here's the thing we're going to go right into. They were not allowed, I guess they're allowed to have their freaking phones out all the time, which is a huge issue that we're going to talk about. And Jonathan Haidt in his book, Anxious Generation, I'm going to really go through some of the stuff I learned from that incredible book here about technology and how clearly we can see that it's not correlated. It's actually causative with this anxiety epidemic in Gen Z, especially since 2010 and 2012. So they couldn't have their phones on when I did this presentation about chiropractic and tried to get Q&A. And it was literally like talking to a wall. Just instead of having the four walls in the classroom, there was a bunch of walls sitting in desk staring at me as well. And I walked out of that room that day, honestly, completely perplexed. And my friend Mendy, who brought me in there, she pulled me aside, and I had had a crazy morning. I got there just like, I walked right in. She didn't have any time to really prep me. I've done it before, so I didn't really need it. And she said, I'm so sorry. I meant to actually pull you aside before I threw you in there to tell you that because of smartphones, and now that they can have them in school all the time, these guys, and she goes, it's heartbreaking. It's more than heartbreaking. She said, they don't know how to interact socially and with communication with other humans and other adults. They only know how to interact on social media. And so I had heard that, you guys. This just happened a few months ago prior to recording this. Of course I had heard that. Of course I have a daughter. I'm going to talk to you about the strategies we use with our family to do everything we can to prevent this tsunami of technology from overriding our family as well. And I think you're really going to love the real life strategies we use in this. But I knew what I was going into, but I didn't know until I left that day how difficult it is for those kids. Now, that's the perspective I want you to hear on my intro story here. I didn't leave feeling bad for me. I didn't leave feeling judgmental of the teachers or the school or the administrators or even the parents. Anytime where our job is to empower parents and be able to inform and get them information about something they didn't know before, it never, ever son of a gun comes from a place of judgment, because I kicked us off with letting us all know the reality of it's the hardest job in history by a million miles, okay, being a parent. Then do it in this generation. Of course, every generation is going to say they had it hardest. And let's not worry about who did. Let's help our kids have it the best, okay? Let's face this adversity. Let's face this technology tsunami head on. And let's learn about it together so we can do something differently than what's happening right now. Because right now, here's the stats. Right now, major depression among teens since 2010. And hang on that 2010 number. That's going to become very important in this episode. There's a 145% increase in girls with major depressive disorder, in teen girls. 161% in boys. Mental illness among college, and these were already exploding since 2010, 2012, and then the COVID lockdown shutdowns and taking kids away from the little tiny bit of social and the way God designed them, the way their brains must develop. And then when we shut everything down, even though they weren't at risk, and we did that, we then took away the last little hope they had to get through this tough time. So 145% increase in girls, 161% increase in boys, mental illness in college students. Since 2010, anxiety, 134% increase. Depression, 106% increase. Anxiety prevalence is up in all ages, but it is up the most, 139% in ages 18 to 25. And a 2023 study of American college students found, be ready for this, this just sucks what I'm about to read off here, 37%, so over a third of college students reported feeling anxious always, or most of the time. So they live a life riddled with anxiety, 31% half the time, which if you math that out, then means only one third of college students said they feel anxiety half the time or less or never. Now, what the heck is going on? Where are we? How did we get here? And that's what I want to know, not only from a doctor perspective, so I can best serve my patients and serve you as families through this community with the PX Docs platform and the Experience Miracles podcast, but obviously, really, deep down in my heart, need to know this stuff for my teenagers and the two that soon will be. So I know as a dad, like it or not, and when you get the perspective I can share with you today, you actually learn to love it, not just like it. There must be tough situations. They're just like they needed to get a fever when they were tiny to teach their immune system how to handle viruses and bacteria. So just like we didn't give them Tylenol, just like we didn't give them medication for every cough, sneeze, or sniffle, just like we didn't throw antibiotics at every viral ear infection, another podcast episode for another day, because we know that medicine teaches you to do those things in the other direction. So no wonder so many families end up dependent upon medications for these conditions too. But what I've always known is that our kiddos are going to face adversity, and it's going to increase in its quantity and likely its significance once they reach those teenage years. That's called life. There will be stress. There will be anxiety. There will be heartache. There will be frustration and disappointment and so forth. And through it, and because of it, they will be able to build resilience and character. So what Christina, my beautiful, courageous, resilient wife, and I have been doing this whole time is preparing for the best, even if the worst came. Now, that's not the perspective that is the easiest to say out loud. What we would love to do, and actually what Jonathan Haidt teaches, I should have looked up how to say it first. Sorry, buddy. Hope to have you on the podcast. So I probably should have definitely, just in case you listen to this one, don't know that you will, but I probably should have pronounced your name right if I wanted you to accept an interview to come back and have this conversation together. Come on, God, please orchestrate that, because this man is brilliant. His books, especially this recent one, incredible, blew my mind, helped me so much to prepare for this as a dad. And this podcast episode as well. But we've been preparing for that. So I guess what I'm talking about right now, parents, is even as parents of this generation, right? So we are parenting these Gen Z kids, and we have done it differently. We have not said to our kiddos that the best path for you will be the easy one. We have not said the best path for you will be the one that we do all the hard work for you. We have not said the best path for you is to get a phone at age 10 and live on it forever and never go outside and eat Cheez-Its and slam Rockstar energy drinks and take all the medications and everything else and be dependent upon pharmaceuticals for well-being. We have walked the... I love when people call it alternative. It's like calling organic food alternative. I've talked about that on the podcast. There's no organic food shouldn't need the label and the descriptor. The other kind could. So what we actually have learned is that this kind of safe or gentle parenting approach is actually, even before technology has exploded on the scene, and we're going to beat that one up big time, along with a few other things that no one else, not even Jonathan, was talking about in his book. A few other things are there first, but we knew stress was coming, so we've been building character and been building resilience and preparing the whole time. Now, there's a sweet spot to this mental perspective, isn't there, that I'm walking you guys through? Because on one hand, if you take what I'm saying and you take it too far, it sounds super pessimistic, super doomsday, super negative. Like, come on, man. And also, if you really have that natural inclination, which we all do as parents, to say the only thing I want my kids to do is to never be sad and never be mad and never be anxious. If we never let them face challenge, they will be consumed by it forever. We have to teach them. So I don't even like the word prevention. What we're talking about here is preparation. We're not saying, oh, life is terrible and there's bad things everywhere, so be ready. No, we're saying life has reality to it. And growing up and going through high school, especially in this friggin' generation and what everybody's going through and all the anxiety and all the stress and all the victim mentality and all the different things that are out there at way high of rates, actually what I'm talking about is needed now more than ever before. If you've listened to our Perfect Storm episode, which I'm going to go through that today because there's actually early triggers of anxiety through pregnancy, at labor and delivery, and early childhood development, there is some massive, three of them actually, well-known, scientifically proven triggers of anxiety and building a child towards what's called the sympathetic cliff, where the nervous system gets wound up, stuck in anxiety, and then trips over or spills into anxiety and depression in the grade school and teenage and young adult years. So it didn't just start there because teenage life is hard. Teen life is hard, especially today due to technology. But if you know this stuff, then the best path you can do is not avoid it, but be ready for it and be prepared for it. And I pray that today that this different perspective becomes not the alternative perspective, becomes not the new perspective, but becomes the foundational, most effective perspective. And again, I'll just say it one more time before we start to get deep into the neuroscience. That does not mean your child will not have bouts of anxiety. In fact, the first thing I'll teach you when we get into the neurology and the neuroscience of anxiety is that it's normal for the nervous system to go into anxiety to certain responses, certain stimuli, certain situations. What is abnormal and where it becomes a chronic mental and emotional health condition is when it never goes away and it never shuts off. We know the cause. We know the triggers, multiple and plural, that cause it to go from normal to abnormal, from healthy to unhealthy. And I'll teach you exactly what those things are. So if they happen for your kiddo, you can then make sense of part three and you can be stoked and excited and all about part three of this podcast, which is if that happened, is happening to your family, what do you do about it? What are the drug-free action steps and strategies to get through it? Because maybe you didn't know the steps, the sequences, the perfect storm that leads to anxiety, maybe this just showed up fast for all of us, because it did. And so this shift to safe or gentle parenting, where we were concerned to put our kids outside because, there's predators out there, sexual predators, violence, there's all this stuff outside the house, so let's keep them inside the house. That was kind of the first move, as Jonathan Haidt talks about in his book, The Anxious Generation. And when you really learn about that first generational shift, that sort of loaded things to have ready to explode when technology did, because if our kids are not outside, engaged socially, creative play, hanging out with others, and learning how life works out there, not only are they missing out on the good things that come from that to prepare them for life outside of our house, outside of our world, but there's a double-edged sword here. One, they're not out there going through the brain-based neurological development that they need to being outside in with friends, in nature, socialized. Yes, sometimes doing things maybe they shouldn't be doing, because if you don't get in trouble a little bit, you don't know what trouble is. So all the things. And if they're not out there doing that and instead they're inside safe, and I know I'm on a podcast, so when I just finger quoted the air, you can't see it, but you can probably feel the inflection or hear the inflection in my voice. And now what happened in 2010 and 2012 with not only the explosion of the internet and personal computers and laptops, but once we started giving kids, freaking kids, phones, and not just phones where they can flip it open and give us a call to get picked up after basketball, but now they can be plugged into the internet 24/7. Since 2012, smartphones gained access to the internet, smartphones gained access to social media, and it is the least. We thought we were protecting our kids by keeping them from the outside and moving them to the inside, and you're going to see there's movement-based neurology problems with that. The technology has problems from all the things that come from it, from inside of it, inside our kids' brains, but they're also just not freaking moving. And movement is calming. Movement organizes the brain. Movement calms the brain. Movement regulates the brain. We have a whole perfect storm in this conversation all about anxiety, because now they're stuck inside and they're way less safe inside, because all they need to do is to pretend to be 13 to access every single freaking website in the world. And that is where the predators, that is where the people coming for them are now. That is where the people who want them to be addicted to social media exist now. There is algorithms for it, there is softwares for it, and there is billions of dollars behind it that say, if we make your child dependent upon this, they win. But your kiddos don't. Their emotional health doesn't. Their resilience doesn't. In fact, the opposite happens. So what is anxiety? I got right into it, didn't I? I'm such a cause-based, obsessed person. I already went right into the first chapter, if you will, of what's causing anxiety, and I didn't quite finish the definition. So let me roll back just a second and tell you a quick, real definition of anxiety. It's sometimes referred to a panic attack, and there is different forms. There's kind of like five different main forms of anxiety, but I don't want to get caught up in the details. I want to get to the real foundational root causes, and that starts with understanding what it is and what it isn't. So anxiety is an intense and excessive feeling of worry or fear of the future. Now, if a child is studying for finals or the ACTs or a big game or a big date with a new, I don't want to talk about that, I got three daughters, whatever, leave that one off the mix, all right? But if they're preparing for a big life moment and they're anxious about it, awesome. That's called neurology. That's called design. There is a specific, actually beneficial purpose to that form of short-term appropriate anxiety. When it becomes sustained, when it becomes excessive, and when we constantly worry about the future, whether it's actually coming or not, that's when the brain gets locked into anxiety. So it's a natural human response when we perceive a threat, and we can manifest that through our thoughts and our emotions. And here's a huge thing that I'm going to teach you on this podcast episode that I don't think as many people go deep into. There is a ton of physical cues and signs of anxiety within the physical body, within the digestive system. And there's also, hang right there with me, don't miss this, there's also a lot of causative factors where the body, the physical, biological mechanisms of the body get offline and dysregulated and dysfunctional first, or what we call subluxated, and they then send signals of stress and anxiety into the brain and trigger anxiety. So when you look at anxiety from, the most common way to look at this is what's called nervous stomach, right? Oh, I'm anxious, I can feel it in my stomach. Or I'm anxious, my neck and my shoulders are killing me. Or I'm anxious, I'm tired and I'm exhausted. The physical representations of anxiety are very much a chicken or the egg conversation, where is it coming from the anxiety, or is it causing the anxiety, or is the answer both? The answer is both chicken and egg. So many individuals, many teenagers are going to experience this in these stressful situations, and the sympathetic fight, flight, or freeze response, that fundamental human reaction, is a mechanism of self-protection. So I need you to hear this as well. If we didn't have anxiety as humans, if we didn't have the sympathetic fight or flight response, we would be really, really worse off. This is a protective, survival, life-sustaining response that God put into our neurophysiology. So in today's episode, I'm going to talk all about the fight or flight system, the sympathetic nervous system, and how it gets triggered, stuck, shifted into overdrive, overreactive, way too much, hypersensitivity, and is the root cause of anxiety. And from here on out, I'm pretty much going to make the sympathetic fight or flight nervous system the bad guy when it's not. It's the bad guy when it's out of balance, it's excessive, and it's stuck on 24/7. So I need you to hear that, because when you understand the root cause neurophysiology of anxiety, you actually can understand the definition of anxiety. Excessive, stuck on always. That's what we need to fix. That's what we need to find and address and reset. And we will teach you exactly how to do that without drugs as we go forward here. So let's break down the scientific mechanisms just a bit more. Remember, on this podcast, I really, really want to teach you the science. I don't want to just give an overview of it. I really do, in the thick of every episode. Just know this. And parents, I'm an Iowa farmer and a dad. So what I'm able to do is leave the lab and make sense of it for you. So I'm going to go granular, going to go detail with this stuff, especially with anxiety. We're going to talk about adrenaline and cortisol and dopamine and serotonin. And we're going to talk about the amygdala and the hippocampus and the cerebellum and the prefrontal cortex and the vagus nerve and dysautonomia. And we're going to talk about these neurological terms for the next 20 to 30 minutes. And I promise you this, all throughout, we will make simple, relatable, actionable sense of them for you. So let's first go through the mechanism that triggers anxiety. When our brain and nervous system, so there's the sensory nervous system, which is on alert always. It's actually what's called our primal survival mechanism. So it's out front. The way God designed us, if we didn't have what I'm going to teach you in a second about the parasympathetic nervous system and the vagus nerve, if we didn't have a braking system that developed as we adapted through our design, we would always live in anxiety. We would always live in fight or flight. So the hardwiring, the initial, that's why in this world where stress has become too early for our kiddos, and too much, because we are naturally neurologically hardwired for sympathetic dominance, fight or flight anxiety, that's why there's more of it. So we need to understand this foundational wiring that when stress is detected, our nervous system triggers. So it's nervous system first, then hormones, chemicals, and neurotransmitters are released. So there's a neurological sensory perception. Step one is the perception. That perception can either be appropriate or inappropriate. And you gotta, I gotta go slow here with step one, even in our basic science review here, because we're going to need to come back to step one to get your child better. Where medicine goes is at best the middleman, steps two and three that lead to the symptoms. And then medications not only do that, but so do a lot of supplementations. And those sort of natural health responses are still going to try and balance out step two and three, but they come from step one. So I'm not trying to be annoying by pausing so much right here. The first step of anxiety is the nervous system's perception of the perceived threat. So what I gotta get you to understand is that often, once the nervous system gets what's called subluxated, dysregulated, and goes through what's called dysautonomia, it automatically gets stuck in inappropriate perception or altered perception. Step one gets skewed and thrown sideways. And when you see that later on, you'll know that you're never going to get anxiety all the way better for you or your child if you don't address step one first and foundationally. Because after the nervous system perceives this threat, so perception, it then creates a chemical reaction. So the nervous system signals to things like the adrenals, the HPA axis, and so forth to kick out stress hormones, cortisol, adrenaline, norepinephrine. And so these chemicals in a stressful reaction, a stressful situation, they need to go high. Cortisol, adrenaline, norepinephrine, they go into the bloodstream and now they get this cycle that when appropriate, we need, when inappropriate is not good. They get this cycle going where the stress hormones go high and they then further activate the nervous system to go deeper into sympathetic fight or flight response. And what happens? The blood flow gets going, the heart gets pumping. And in this sympathetic fight or flight response, there's things that are extra activated for the fight or for the flight. So our muscles, our heart, basically the physical response of anxiety is to get out of there. Either fight your way out or flight your way out. It's primal. And so when the physical body gets the primary nervous system and neurophysiological focus, it's got to be stolen. It's got to be taken from some other system. So as soon as the sympathetic fight or flight response is triggered, the digestive system is shut down and suppressed. The immune system and the anti-inflammatory system, in fact, a sympathetic response, a fight or flight response is pro-inflammatory because it's preparing for wound. It's preparing for battle. It is programmed for this. So it will actually get the immune system hypersensitive. So allergies, autoimmune conditions very much are a high comorbidity with anxiety. I have met maybe less than 10% of my patients, teenagers, young adults who have anxiety do not also, so less than 10% are healthy immune systems and digestive systems. Meaning, better way to say that, 90% plus of our patients have chronic gut issues and immune pro-inflammatory autoimmune conditions. They have a long history of chronic ear infections. They have a long history of asthma and allergies. And also in the mix of that, those medications, corticosteroids, stimulate the sympathetic nervous system further and cause anxiety, anger, ADHD, and so forth. So it is a perfect freaking storm, vicious cycle that is natural and then goes off track in this generation. So the chemicals aren't the bad guy. They're the middleman. If you've ever heard the phrase before, don't kill the messenger, that's this. Anxiety is not directly, and there's research beyond belief on this. We've known this forever. Now, will the medical system change? No, they sell this stuff. They have to sell this theory because that's what it is. That's what it was. And now it's like the genetic theory. We're playing Family Feud. What is the actual root cause of anxiety? Genetics, all by themselves. I don't know who's the host of, is it Drew? No, gosh, I'm old. Steve Harvey, all right? So boom, if you've ever watched Family Feud, and if you haven't, what's wrong with you? It's a wonderful show. It's funny, okay? So Family Feud, what are the actual real root causes of anxiety? Genetics, all by themselves. Somebody answers, no, Red X, okay? If you've never watched Family Feud, I'm really butchering this analogy, but I'm running out one more. And then they go, I got it. It's a chemical imbalance. It's not. And that's you're probably not supposed to make that word on a podcast. My podcast producer is probably all salty with me right now because he's going to have to edit that out of there somehow, mute it. I don't know. But I'm in the thick of it right here because we're teaching you what's actually going on. If it was a chemical imbalance, then that means chemicals run our whole system, and they don't. The nervous system does. Those chemicals, those hormones, those neurotransmitters, literally, I love teaching this part, by name, you can find the answer. Neurotransmitters. They transmit messages for the neuro system. Anxiety is not caused directly, foundationally, by an imbalance of chemicals. It's caused directly, foundationally, by an imbalance of the nervous system first. Okay? That is not genetic in the vast majority of cases. We do know there is a slight genetic predisposition to anxiety, same as allergies, same as scoliosis, same as heart disease. What genetic predisposition means is this, and I'll do a whole episode on epigenetics and genetic predispositions here coming up soon. You're definitely going to want to listen to that one because it's going to take what I'm going to teach here and make full, complete sense of it. Genetic predisposition means, okay, they're at play. They're one of, way down the list, one of the involved, somewhat contributing factors. But the truth is, when we look at genetics, we know that predisposition should be communicated to families in this way. Hey, if you know there's a slight higher risk of anxiety or ADHD or heart disease in your family, you really need to be proactively, everything we're freaking talking about on this podcast right now, you need to do that stuff double time for your family. If there's a slight increased risk of X, Y, or Z, you need to know the environmental, real life, actual causative factors, primarily causative factors of those conditions, and address them and take care of them better than the average bear who doesn't have that genetic predisposition. So for me, a great example of this, I guess I'm doing a little mini episode on epigenetics right now. While studying genetics, I grew up on a farm, you know, GMOs, all that sort of stuff. So I learned all about genetics from an ag perspective. Sorry about that. GMOs are awful for us. Great for inheritance, terrible for health. And then I studied a ton to do with heart disease, because I lost both my grandfathers to that, and it's a huge risk factor on my family's side. And obviously, I didn't want a shortened life due to heart disease. So when I bought the genetic theory that medicine still sells to everyone from heart disease to ADHD to anxiety, today's conversation, hook, line, and sinker, it just didn't sit right with me. And so that's actually why I chose that as a dual major in undergrad, to study genetics for my own family's health, just to figure something out. And when I found that I can control all of the factors that matter much more than my slight genetic predisposition, when I found that maybe I shouldn't smoke, maybe I should exercise, maybe I shouldn't be so stressed, maybe I shouldn't put 4 inches of margarine on my white toast with Fruity Pebbles and Braunschweiger. And if you grew up on a farm and you're German, then you know what Braunschweiger is. And it's good tasting if you're weird like me, but it's not good for you. I learned, dang it, these are the triggers of this trouble. So awesome. So you go from dang it to awesome. Now I know, now I can do something about it. Now that was a pretty deep sideways conversation into genetics as we're going through the granular mechanisms of anxiety. Because what you need to know is this isn't programmed. So predisposition is the exact opposite word of predetermined. People who sell anxiety medications want it to be predetermined. That's not the case. There is many cases where medications will save lives. There is many cases where a stress, the stressful events, the upbringing, the lifestyle that a child, a person is put through is so much, so fast, and so overwhelming that I'm actually wildly thankful. And I may not seem it. This may seem like a perspective you wouldn't expect me to share right in the thick of this one. I am so thankful that so many of our patients have been able to have medical interventions, including pharmaceutical psychotropic medications, to give them a chance to heal, to just call time out for a little bit, to just throw them a life preserver and get their head neurophysiologically above water. Because when you chemically manipulate serotonin and dopamine and these things, you're going to have a symptomatic response for some cases. It won't last and it won't stick. And we know that. I always ask patients, you know, I've been in this game for a long time serving patients, and sometimes you'll meet folks who are, one, beholden to the genetic theory by a large margin, and two, kind of one always comes with two. If they're super beholden to the genetic predetermined theory of anxiety and ADHD and depression, well, then they're very beholden to their medication. I have this, I'm broken this way, I need this medication to fill the gap that my brokenness has created. And they live in that way, so I'll always say, okay, well, if the medications are working, stop taking them for 30 days and then report back. And I'm not trying to be a jerk in this situation. I'm just simply trying to say they may be working symptomatically, externally, but they're not at all working to address the real root cause. And the challenge we face is they actually make things worse when you try and withdraw and you try and rebound and get off of them and address them drug-free. So I'll move on from this part of the podcast, but I just want parents and families to know that if your child's anxiety, their depression, their behavioral, their emotional challenges got so much so fast, and you were just not at a season where you understood root causes, you were just in a season where it was the pediatrician and the neurologist and everything the medical system said, you were taught to just, you know, hand over fist, believe. We all started there. We've all been there. And so just know that this podcast, this conversation, this real deep dive into the science is going to get you the answers and the explanations to get you to the other side of what's really causing anxiety and causing these challenges. Okay. All right. Quick checklist of the symptoms associated with anxiety. A constant excessive feeling of nervousness, restlessness, or tension. Having a constant and just kind of unrelenting sense of impending danger, panic, or doom. Increased heart rate, hyperventilation, so rapid breath. One thing I can see anxiety and sympathetic dominance on anybody. They breathe through their shoulders or their neck. If you look at their, what's called, we call it the neuro posture. We don't look at anything without the nervous system being the lens we look through it at. If you look at their neuro posture, they are literally breathing through their neck and their shoulders. Their traps and their shoulders are stuck into their ears and into the base of their skull. And you just don't see a lot of room in there. That is literally the physical representation of anxiety. Well, that physical tension into the neurospinal system, the neck, the shoulders, the trap, and the thoracics, that can actually be triggered by birth trauma or physical traumas that then kicks off anxiety. Best example you can get and connect to birth trauma, which I'm a little bit cart before the horse, is concussions and motor vehicle accidents. We know that people who have brain injuries also have brain stem neck injuries, and they not only deal with some of the cognitive challenges post-concussion, but they deal with tons of anxiety and depression. So the trigger can actually be physical first, not just come from the emotional stress of anxiety. So each time we go into one of these symptomatic presentations, these physical representations, we've got to look at it through both lenses. Sweating, trembling, feeling tired, weak, exhausted, trouble concentrating. We're going to talk about exactly next. We're going to get into the components of anxiety within the brain. We're going to talk about cerebellum, hippocampus, amygdala, prefrontal cortex, and we're going to talk about anxiety and the sympathetic dominant subluxation. It overstimulates certain parts of the brain, gets them stuck on, which is the same thing as saying shutting down the parts of the brain that control cognition, emotional regulation, and decision making. So is anxiety brain-based? Yes, anxiety ends up in the brain, but it often starts from the body. Difficulty sleeping, and then a huge one is GI problems, immune pro-inflammatory conditions, and even physical representations of anxiety like rheumatoid arthritis, like celiac disease, and inflammatory conditions that either A, attack the bowels, so that's a muscle. The gut is actually a muscle. The intestines are what are called smooth muscles. They have the same, very similar construct to skeletal muscles on the outside. So most people will feel the physical representations of anxiety and actually have it triggered from these issues within the digestive system and the GI system. Second is the immune system, and autoimmunity and pro-inflammatory conditions are a huge component of this. And third is the physical representation. They will feel physical pain, tension, even in kids and teenagers. And when I say one, two, first, second, and third, they all come together from the same root cause. And that's what was going on with our, I love to call her our homie, Hannah. Okay, the H's just go together. When you see Hannah now today, Hannah's smile will blow you away. Her resilience, her social and emotional regulation, her ability to carry conversation, her ability to look forward at her life. She's already chosen to become a neurologically focused pediatric chiropractor, and at 16 years old is already choosing what chiropractic school she's going to go and where she wants to work and who she wants to intern with. I have not met too many teenagers this impressive. Miss Hannah reminds me a lot of my very resilient rock star daughter, 16-year-old as well, Miss Addison. And this kid is full of freaking life in every way you would dream and pray that a teenager would be today. She did not start that way when we met her a few months ago. So Hannah lived a very healthy childhood. She was pretty good as far as her immune system, her digestive system, her sleep, and her emotional status. But if we dig all the way back, and here's where we're segueing into the root causes that are right in front of us, but nobody knows about yet. So I went deep into technology. I'll go even a little bit deeper. We went into genetics. We went into chemical imbalance theory. I bet you've thought about those as triggers of anxiety. I bet you know that social media and your teen being stuck on your phone is a big deal. I bet you know that too much sugar, too much dairy, too much chemicals, too many preservatives in food. I bet you've already tried to clean out the pantry and clean up the diet. Yeah, real easy to do with a 16-year-old riddled with anxiety and ADHD who all they want is Kraft mac and cheese, more sugar, more dairy, more ice cream, and more Rockstar energy drinks. It's not easy to do, being quite facetious there. And you've probably gone through counseling, maybe tried medication, and you've gone through everything to try and understand this. The one place I need to take you, and Hannah's story takes us there, is actually all the way back to preconception and pregnancy. So for Hannah's rock star, courageous, incredible mother, there was a lot of stress leading up to getting pregnant with Hannah. There was a lot of loss in that case history for Hannah's initial nervous system development, because the nervous system is the very first thing to form in utero. The first moments of life are entirely nervous system development. The first thing to form in utero, what's called fetal development, so human development, is what's called the brain stem and the neural tube. The first component of the nervous system to form is the sympathetic fight or flight protective component of the nervous system. The way God designed us is brilliant. I've studied it my whole life. I understand it really well. And I'd bet you I maybe understand 1% of it. And I actually look at it from an optimizing, function, health promoting lens. So I actually think I'm able to see it with a more complete view when I go, quote unquote, in the lab and look at this stuff and read these papers versus someone who has medical training, who isn't looking for the best outcomes. They're looking for the worst. They're looking for pathology. It really matters what lens, what set of glasses, what philosophy or perspective you use when you're reading scientific research. How can one thing, a research paper, be interpreted in different directions? Well, if you're trying to sell pharmaceuticals from it, and you're trying to sell pathology, and you're trying to sell genetic predeterminism, and you're trying to sell victim mentality to people out there, you'll sell it that way because you'll see it that way because you need to. When you're dealing hope, when you're dealing answers and drug-free solutions and care options for family, you're not looking for the problem. You're looking for the potential. And so when we looked deep into Hannah's case history, we did first have to find where the problem actually first triggered. And what we now know, and in the show notes of this episode, you can go to our website and you can read all of our articles about anxiety. And at the bottom of all of our articles is all of the research citations that I will reference in these podcast episodes. There is a ton of research connecting maternal distress, prenatal distress, so high amounts of anxiety, high amounts of inflammation, high amounts of medical management, risk, tension, anxiety, cortisol, inflammation from mom's neurophysiological system shared with babies during that very sensitive, critical period of neurodevelopment. Now, what that means is because the sympathetic fight or flight anxiety producing side of the nervous system is the natural first component of what's called the autonomic central nervous system to develop, that not only does it show up first, but then if it is extra or overstimulated early and often, nerves that fire together wire together. God designed our nervous system to be plastic. We learn from experiences. That's why what we talked about before, not having our kids go out into the world and learn how to overcome social, emotional challenges on their own is actually a deficit. We need to go learn through good and by overcoming bad to achieve optimal development and optimal outcomes. And so what we now know is that there is three very common triggers of anxiety, and that anxiety symptomatically by diagnostic criteria may not show up until age 3. Age 7, age 13, or age 14, 15, and 16. Hannah not only got stuck with a huge amount of anxiety, depression, emotional dysregulation, she actually ended up with a ton of physical inflammation, a ton of arthritis. And what does the medical world know to do with arthritis and physical representation of neurophysiological distress? Medicated, Humira, heavy hitting, shut everything down medications. And when you try and shut down the immune system, because the nervous system, the immune system, the gastrointestinal system, the hormonal system, and the physical motor system, those five key systems I will talk about on every single podcast episode. We did it with our autism deep dive. We did it with our ADHD deep dive. Those four or five core foundational systems of the body all must work in concert. If one is malfunctioning, dysfunctioning, especially the nervous system, which is the foundation the other four are dictated and coordinated from, they all feel it, if you will. They all experience it. Different distributions, different dosages of dysfunction into different systems. Some kinds of neurological stress go to the gut and they wreak havoc there. Some kinds of neurological stress go to the immune system and they wreak havoc there. Some kinds of neurological stress go into the hormonal or the physical systems and wreak havoc there. And some kind goes everywhere. We call that the perfect storm. When a child is dealing with all of this stuff and each system is offline, which is what was going on with Hannah, chronic pain, inflammation, digestive issues, immune dysregulation, and then anxiety and emotional dysregulation as well. What medicine and even natural integrative health tries to do is address them individually, address them back to our conversation from before, our analogy before. They try and address them on an island. So you are sent to a rheumatologist or an immunologist. You are sent to a psychiatrist or a psychologist. You are sent to a neurologist. You are sent to a gastroenterologist. So what happened with medicine is the reason they can't see the picture we are so easily, clearly painting for you today is because they live inside of a silo with no windows. They only see the system that they work on. So medicine not only comes from a genetic predeterminism, chemical imbalance theory, so they're looking at things through the wrong lens, they actually don't even get to look at the whole picture because they each work within their specialty. And a case like Hannah's is far more common. So we're taking the anxiety component that this rock star dealt with and going deep on it today, but you're actually getting to the root cause of all of her challenges when you get into nervous system dysfunction, dysregulation, and what's called dysautonomia, which is the last third chapter thing for me to teach you here today. Because when you understand this, when you understand what's really foundationally, truly, there's my excessive descriptive words again, causing anxiety, ADHD, asthma, all the things, then you know that until you get there, until you address that root cause head on, it's hard to fully address it and handle it in that way. So the smartphones, the access to social media, the lack of movement, the lack of social engagement, the freaking erosion of character building, the replacement of PE with more time in the tech lab to peruse the internet. There is a long list of things that are, I feel, quite obvious, and you probably do too, quite obviously causing and triggering this rewiring of childhood, as again, that rock star Jonathan Haidt talks about, and this anxious generation. But there's actually more. And this podcast episode is going to go beyond the technology. It's going to go beyond nutrition and physiology and chemical imbalances. It's actually even going to go beyond the gut-brain connection and the microbiome and how inflammation from the gut and the immune system can reach the brain and trigger inflammatory cascades there for the amygdala and so forth and create anxiety. All of those pathways, all of those triggers and those conversations are essential. They are accurate and they are a part of the puzzle, but they are not the whole puzzle at all. The neuroscience of anxiety is what we need to dive one layer even deeper and teach you so you know exactly how to get your child out of this anxiety storm. So for our third and final chapter, I suppose this is 3A, because 3A will really get you to 3B, which is the drug-free action steps and solutions I know you came here for. I promise you are going to get those. You need to know them in full, clear picture, complete understanding of what it takes to get your child through this, because I know I know who I am blessed to connect to through this podcast. I know you have been up late at night. I know, again, you maybe have not only exhausted every medication, but you've exhausted every diet change, every detox. You've gone after the microbiome. You've gone after parasites. You've gone after it all. You know about mycoplasma and everything in between you never thought you'd know about. There's a few more things you really need to know about to get your child all the way better. And I can't wait to get them to you because they will clearly reveal the true root cause addressing drug-free action steps for anxiety. So I'm going to read right from one of my favorite research papers on the neuroscience of anxiety. So bear with me on this. I'm going to read all the nerd words, and then I will come back through and I will Iowa farmer interpret them for all of us. Mood and anxiety disorders are characterized by a variety of neuroendocrine, neurotransmitter, and neuroanatomical disruptions. Okay, I'm not going to read it without explaining each sentence to you because that would not help you. So the last thing listed there in our three-prong list of nerdiness, neuroendocrine, neurotransmitter, neuroanatomical disruptions, should be written in the other order. You most commonly, by far, end up with neuroendocrine and neurotransmitter disruptions after neuroanatomical or physical disruptions trigger that chemical storm. And when you understand that, when you understand that anxiety is a brain-based disorder that does not begin in the brain, but ends up in the brain, you will have the exact direction and action steps that are drug-free and so insanely helpful to improve your child's quality of life and get to the other side of this anxiety storm. Carrying on, identifying the most functionally relevant differences is complicated by the high degree of interconnectivity between neurotransmitter and neuropeptide containing circuits in limbic brainstem and higher cortical brain areas. Pulling two threads there, the limbic system, the emotional system. It is rooted in what's called located, literally anatomically. The mechanisms of it are located in the brainstem or the forebrain. So the last chapter of this deep dive episode on anxiety is to teach you that it's coming from the brainstem and to teach you when you understand the neurospinal system, the vagus nerve and the brainstem and how that is where anxiety really truly roots from, you'll know exactly how to go there and get your child better. Furthermore, a primary alteration in brain structure or function. There we go. They're starting to get it. Or in neurotransmitter signaling. May, notice how they have to go with or. Huh, we still can't give up on this. Neurotransmitters, right? They got to be involved. They are. You got it. We're going to give you medical research, guys and gals. We're going to give you your neurotransmitters. It's coming. You can hang on to your little dopamine and serotonin throw pillow, your little buddy, you know, your little, I have little kids still, and they just, you know, you can carry them with you wherever you go, because you just can't not talk about neurotransmitters, even though they transmit messages for the neural system. I just can't not see them struggling to make sense of this, even in their own research paper. And a great paper, phenomenal paper with lots of answers, but I'm going to complete it for you. So I'll go back. A primary alteration in brain structure or function or in neurotransmitter signaling may result from environmental experiences and underlying genetic predisposition. Such alterations can increase the risk for psychopathology, aka anxiety, depression, and emotional dysregulation. Now, I love this. This is one of the first papers from a traditional approach to actually talk about the physical, environmental disruptions and experiences and put them together with genetic predisposition. The way they just described everything in there, I would probably change the word or that I kind of pulled on for a second to and then. So I'll reread that. But everything else in this introduction to emotional processing is dead on. I would reorder the first sentence to say neuroanatomical then dictates neuroendocrine and neurotransmitter function. And then I would say this last sentence differently just so you can hear it in this way. Because when you hear it this way, you'll have the answers you're looking for. A primary alteration in brain structure or function and then neurotransmitter signaling may result in this stress, okay? So again, while traditional medicine is going to look at that from the genetic and the chemical imbalance, there's something that first triggers that chemical imbalance. So here's what I want you to know about brains, your child's brain. Now, your child may be 23, your child may be 2 or 3. Whatever age they are dealing with anxiety, the brain was supposed to be, needs to be built, maintained, recharged, restored, if it's not working well. Let's go in that order. The brain and nervous system need to be repaired, restored, reorganized, and reactivated in this order. The way we learn how to get brains better is we must go backwards to go forward, and we need to learn how brains were supposed to be built, healthy, and optimal in that order and sequence. And when we know that, we know the exact order and first place we need to start to get the brain better again. This goes all the way back to the beginning of my episode with you guys. The order, the first thing that goes haywire in anxiety needs to be fixed first to fully, completely get anxiety better. If we go only to the symptoms, medications, or only to the middleman, medications and symptom suppression, which is exactly what they do, we're not there. But the gut is also the middleman. The immune system and inflammation is also the middleman. And the hormones and the neurotransmitters are the middleman. They're not the foundation. So brains are built what we call bottom up, back, forward over time. Bottom up means the brain is a massive sensory processing center. The brain takes in 300 trillion bits of information per minute, some researchers have shown. And the developing brain is even more exploding at a faster rate. So this bottom up means that sensory information comes into the brain from the sensory processing system. So we actually have seven senses: eyes, ears, tongue, taste, all those things. Tactile, you've learned about the five in high school biology class. But the sixth sense and the seventh sense are the most important. It's movement. It's called proprioception or mechanoreception, and then vestibular function, which is our balance and coordination. So what we know about developing brain and nervous system health is that if their movement, motor milestones, particularly gross motor milestones, are thrown off track, there's a much higher risk of autism, ADHD, anxiety, and neurological challenges later on. Because the movement-based hierarchy, the movement-based sequence done bottom up, back forward over time, and I would add in a specific order. Yes, I'm very obsessed with that, because when you understand the sequential conversation we're having, again, you understand what is probably very much foundationally missing in getting your child's anxiety better. Movement done in that order is essential. And so the nervous system takes that information in from all seven of those senses, and they bring it in from the outside. So that's called the external environment. So there's external stimuli. So that's why there can be very bad things on the outside. There can be toxins that come injected, ingested, or inhaled and get on the inside and wreak havoc from into the brain, bottom up, back forward. They come through the gut. They come through the bloodstream. They come through CSF, and they get into the brain when they're not supposed to. Toxins are not good. Technology is the fourth, what we call fourth T. Chiropractic always talks about the three T's: traumas, physical stress. We're going there next, birth trauma. Toxins, the rest of the world talks about that. So I do very little on this podcast, because you can get it from 4,632 other people talking about the role of diet, detoxes, and toxins in brain-based inflammation and anxiety. And they're right, but they're incomplete. Same as chemical imbalance. So you can go down that road, the second T of toxins. The third T is the big one: emotional trauma. That is sustained. That's the worst one. But in today's world, our kids struggle with a fourth T. So those experiences, those four T's, come from the outside, they get inside, and then they get into the nervous system. So those are external triggers of this cascade. But there's also what's called interoception, or internal sensory processing. The brain is also constantly in charge of perceiving, remember that word from before, perceiving what's going on inside the body, making the appropriate decisions. That's called neurocoordination, the decision making that different parts of the brain do, and then it decides the best response, the best effect. In appropriate perception of threats, short term, the nervous system absolutely positively should go into an amygdala-driven response. HPA access fires away. Here we go, adrenals. Here we go, cortisol. Here we go, epinephrine. And there should be a short-term anxiety fight-or-flight response that, as soon as the threat passes and is proven to be gone or never was actually there, the nervous system knows exactly how to shut that cascade off and turn back on the parasympathetic vagus nerve regulation, calming, we'll call it for today, anti-anxiety side of the nervous system. But what happens when the switch gets stuck on? And that trigger of a stuck on sympathetic fight or flight anxiety inducing neurological cascade and pathway, it may look like it didn't start till third grade. It may look like it didn't start till the COVID years. It may look like it didn't start till teenage years or college, but it started earlier. And it may also look like phones, technology, and toxins are the only trigger, because when they came, so did anxiety. But to get your child all the way better, and I know how deep I've taken you on this podcast, I would not be doing my job to save your child from this freaking storm that is unfair to them and unfair to the world. Because when a child gets locked into anxiety, when a child gets locked into ADHD and it goes too far, too much, deficit disorder, listen to that deep dive episode, when they get locked into autism, then they get locked out of the high, incredible, amazing experience that life is supposed to have. What I despise about anxiety and these neurological challenges for kids is it's not just the bad that comes from them. It's the good that the child misses out on because of them. It's the good that the world misses out on, because what anxiety causes is withdrawal. What anxiety causes is, if all of this is going to stress me out and I can't overcome it and I can't get through it, I'm not going to go towards it. What anxiety spills over into is what's called neurological exhaustion. After the sympathetic nervous system, which runs on overdrive, on autopilot all the time, for kids with anxiety, when you run on the gas pedal 24/7, 365 years on end, eventually you run out of gas. Eventually you run out of the good stuff. Eventually you run out of serotonin and dopamine to try and keep up, because when cortisol and adrenaline and all these stress hormones go high, the brain and the nervous system is smart, and it then triggers production of serotonin and dopamine, the feel-good, calm-down, take-it-easy chemicals, to try and keep up. The reason they become imbalanced is not because they were genetically programmed to be imbalanced. It's because the stress is too much and the good is too little. Because when brains are not built appropriately, when there is what's called subluxation, so neuro, biomechanical, physical injury to the brainstem and to the body from birth trauma, breech position, cord wrapped, and then also the third, so the first trigger, maternal distress, high stress pregnancy like Hannah's. Second, birth trauma, forceps, vacuum, emergency C-section, induction. There is a high neurophysiological research connected clinical correlation, or sorry, clinical connection between induction and anxiety later on in life, and things like cord wrapped, breech position, these physical traumatic injuries at birth to the brainstem, because the brainstem is the primal brain. So the brainstem, in the very back of the brain, we have what's called the cerebellum. And at the brainstem, right where the brainstem and the neck and the what we call the neurospinal system, or the spinal cord and the spine meet, is a very important nerve called the vagus nerve. So that is the back of the brain. The bottom of the brain is the spinal cord and the sensory system. Let me go there first. So if we have sensory processing challenges, sensory physical disruptions and alterations, remember that research paper we read its introduction? If there is neuroanatomical physical disruptions to sensory information getting into these key components of the brain, it will then shift the neurotransmitters and the neuropeptides to cause this response. So I've been saying the same thing over and over again, just through different lenses and different anatomical terminology. But the first thing that happens is the bottom of the nervous system, the bottom of the brain, is frequently injured at birth. And then the third overlooked factor is, yes, toxins, inflammation. But in the vast majority of cases I've taken, Hannah's included, 90% plus of our kids and young adults, even if we take a case history of somebody who is 23 years old, we go all the way back to pregnancy, labor and delivery, and early childhood. And in 90% of cases, we have one or both of those first two factors: a high stress, high risk pregnancy, and a high intervention, forceps, vacuum, emergency C-section, induction, cord, breech, some sort of physical injury to the brainstem that then triggers colic, constipation, chronic ear infections, asthma, allergies, gastrointestinal issues that, as a young child, the pediatrician tells these parents, don't worry, they'll grow out of that. That screaming, that colic, that inability to soothe, calm, and regulate themselves neurologically, physically, the baby who's arching and thrusting and full of tension and inflammation and challenges, they don't grow out of that. They grow into chronic neurological issues. So the back of the brain is where the cerebellum and the vagus nerve are. And if we injure through those birth traumatic experiences or other falls, and childhood traumas can do this later on as well, or abnormal motor milestones, those brains need to be built where that stimulus, that physical motor movement-based stimulus, comes through those structures, bottom up, back forward. The back of the brain is called the cerebellum, and it comprises only 20% of the brain's volume, its actual anatomy, but contains 50% or more of its neurons because it has the most important job in the brain. It's the relay control center. It's air traffic control. A lot previously, neuroscientists used to think that the middle of the brain, and it would make sense anatomically, right? If you just look at it on a sketch, the middle of the brain is the relay center. It is. But the first most important relay center before that secondary relay center is the cerebellum. Then from there, if we take this conversation, brains are built bottom up. So the spinal cord, any injury to the spine, any injury to the neck, what's called subluxation. So that misalignment, that tension, that is exactly why this is a neurologically focused chiropractic conversation, because nobody else in the world is looking for the connections between birth trauma and physical injuries to the neck and the neurospinal system as the original root cause trigger of these disruptions that we've been talking and teaching about the whole time that then trigger the neuroexpressions and the symptomatology of anxiety, but they are first triggered in the bottom and the back of the brain. And if the bottom is injured, it creates subluxation. Subluxation is sympathetic dominance. The first thing subluxation does after its physical tension and misalignment is it reduces range of motion. It reduces proprioception. It reduces movement. And so those of you that this is the finest, final, nerdy, granular science. This is it right here. We're all the way down to the absolute core of what's going on. Subluxation is a lack of movement in the most important structures of the movement-dependent nervous system, period. The bottom of the brain, brainstem, neck, and neurospinal system, and then the back of the brain and that cranial brainstem system near the cerebellum and the vagus nerve. And so when subluxation is there, and you can go to our website and you can learn all about subluxation all by itself. Each of these terms we introduced to you today, moms and dads, if your child struggles with anxiety or anything like this, you need to understand these 5 to 10 terms in full. I'm doing deep dive podcast episodes on each of them, but if you're ready now, your child's struggling with anxiety and you've tried all the meds, all the diet changes, all the detoxes, all the infrared saunas, all the supplements, all the things, and your child is struggling, go to the website and read about subluxation, read about birth trauma, read about dysautonomia, the vagus nerve, read about this stuff so you can find the full, foundational, complete answers to get your child out of their anxiety storm, because subluxation triggers a loss of what's called proprioception, a reduction in motion and movement. When you are stressed, mom and dad, when you are anxious, when you are wound up, do you go for a walk to feel better or sit down and stare at your screen? Well, I shouldn't say which do you do? If you did, if somebody is stressed, anxious, wound up, if they sit down, hunched over, and stare at a screen, do they feel better or worse? Spend all day on your phone. How do you feel emotionally? How do you feel cognitively? In contrast, go for a walk. Go get adjusted. How do you feel mentally, emotionally? So anxiety has a physical manifestation and initial perception first, and it comes from the neck and the brainstem and the neurospinal system. So the cerebellum and the vagus nerve are then going to communicate from the back of the brain forward to the amygdala and the hippocampus. The amygdala, you maybe have heard about it if you've been studying anxiety. The amygdala is our, suppose this is, simplifies it too much, but I'm near the end of this episode here. The amygdala is our fear and anxiety center. The amygdala processes a lot of emotions and a lot of threats and a lot of that. It's homie living on the same block, the hippocampus. Anytime something starts with H, like Hannah in the hippocampus, it's just fun to say homie. So the hippocampus is that relay center that then can really take this conversation, this neurological information. And the amygdala and the hippocampus are very important middlemen, because when they are overstimulated, subluxation, sympathetic dominance, they then shift the nervous system into that HPA axis and into that stress response. But they also can shift it in a different direction. They can also take in good, calming, regulating, organizing signals from the bottom and the back of the brain, but only if they're getting in. And subluxation creates brain, really body to brain first interference, which then triggers all of this cascade, which will be felt symptomatically, emotionally, anxiety, and felt physically downstream, because it's all connected. So when this cascade, this subluxation sympathetic dominant cascade is triggered and the amygdala and the hippocampus are shut, are thrown into more of an emotional response, we actually shunt information to the prefrontal cortex. The prefrontal cortex is the one part of the brain that can get us out of this. So what anybody and everybody knows living with anxiety is they know they're living with anxiety. And the conscious component of the brain, which is a little bit more located into the prefrontal cortex, that's almost the worst part. They know they're doing it. They know they're stuck in it, but they can't get out of it. So talk therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, these things, we try and use positive self-talk, affirmations, meditation, talk therapy to help our kids, to help ourselves, talk ourselves consciously out of this. And it's an awesome path to take to trying to tap into that part of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, and get it working better. But what if it's thrown off first from the perception and the information going to it? What if it's shut down? What if it's suppressed? Not genetically, not by bad design, but by the perfect storm, by the environmental triggers that have overstimulated the sympathetic fight or flight system and understimulated the vagus nerve, parasympathetic prefrontal cortex. What is so exciting, and we are now at that part of this podcast, is we now know that we can access the brain and send the right kind of stimulus and information from the bottom and the back through the middle to the front via physical manifestations, if you will, just using the word we carried out before. We now know we can change brain function through the body. Yes, we can change brain function through the gut and supplements and medications and absorption and through the bloodstream. Heck yes. Have a couple of beers. See how that brain is working. Okay. Not kids. That's not, if kids, you're listening to this, I didn't say that to you. Okay. We can change the brain through exercise. We can go out for a walk. We can go in nature and we can go do those things. But the last thing I need to tell you is the thing you probably already know. You've done all that. You've medications, diet changes, magnesium, melatonin, supplement, walks in nature. They're not potent enough once something called dysautonomia sets in. Adding up everything I taught you today about the real actual neuroscience behind all of this, the connections to the perfect storm and those three early completely overlooked triggers of anxiety, and then toxins, and then technology, and then the crazy world we live in. All of it is involved, and all of it adds up to this neurological imbalance, dysfunction, and dysregulation called dysautonomia. If there is one catch-all neurological term that really describes the root cause of anxiety, it's dysautonomia, because the nervous system is not only excessively over the top shifted into sympathetic dominance, the real answer is that the other side, the calming, regulating, relaxing, deep breathing, digestive triggering, anti-inflammatory, body physical relaxing, sleep generating, let's go ahead and just call it the anti-anxiety side of the nervous system. When a child is subluxated, when they are stuck in dysautonomia, that good side is shut down, suppressed, and interfered with. It can't do its job. It can't get into the brain because the noise, the pathway of sympathetic dominance has taken over. Nerves that fire together, wired together. Brains are built and wired bottom up, back forward. So here's the exciting thing. What if there was a way to stimulate, to activate drug-free, wildly effectively, through time and repetition, meaning you're not only doing it short term, but you can actually retrain, reprogram, reorganize, and rehabituate the brain to, one, get out of that sympathetic storm, get out of that fight or flight. Oh my gosh, there's always a threat. There's always something. I'm always locked into it. That's anxiety. You can't shut that one down. There's no way to just turn that switch off once it's stuck on. There's no way to just think your way out of sympathetic dominance. It is physical. It is neurophysiological mechanisms. And the brain is powerful. Our thoughts are incredible. But when a child is subluxated and stuck in dysautonomia and nervous system dysfunction and dysregulation, when a human is, often those things, talk therapy, nutritional therapy, and often even pharmaceutical therapy are not potent enough, especially the latter, because they don't address the root cause, to actually reset and get the nervous system out of sympathetic dominance. The way you shut down the gas pedal is you actually have to activate and stimulate the brake pedal. So what neurologically focused chiropractors do that is vividly, drastically different and goes so much deeper than anything else out there trying to help kids and families with anxiety is we don't treat, we definitely don't cure, and hear me on this one, my friends, we also don't only go after the middleman. We don't only go after the messengers. We don't only go after the gut. We don't only go after inflammation, and we don't only go after the adrenals and the hormones and the neurotransmitters. We go all the way deep to central and autonomic nervous system dysfunction. We go all the way to the bottom and the back of the brain, and we send neurologically focused adjustments that are specifically designed and programmed. This is a very specific kind of nervous system focused chiropractic. This is not back pain chiropractic. This is not auto accident chiropractic. This is not general wellness, pop in once a month to feel physically better chiropractic. Those are all wonderful kinds of chiropractic. This is a very, very specific kind of chiropractor who's trained in nervous system restoration and nervous system regulation. So our adjustments are designed to, number one, figure out exactly where that sympathetic stuck stress is and make what are called gentle tonal adjustments to release that stuck subluxation and that tension. The other thing the adjustments do, which is perhaps the most important and the most potent is my favorite word, is we know exactly how to stimulate the vagus nerve and the parasympathetic system. And through those physical alterations and manifestations, original trigger mechanisms of this whole cascade that we taught you today through the neuroscience, when you know exactly where to make these nervous system adjustments, you know how to stimulate the parasympathetic nervous system, you know how to stimulate the vagus nerve, and you know how to bring that nervous system back into balance. You know how to improve the communication from the body, where all of this begins, into the brain. Anxiety is a perfect storm. Anxiety is a vicious neurophysiological feedback loop that often began in the body, ends up in the brain, and then the brain sends that stress back into the body and throughout all of your child's life. The middleman is not the answer. The foundation of nervous system dysfunction, subluxation, and dysautonomia is the thing that you need to learn more about, and it's the thing you need to be 100% from this point forward all about finding and getting care for, because this kind of care is so stinking life-changing because we're addressing the real root cause. What I'll leave you with is this, my very favorite part of the neurologically focused chiropractic approach is that we aren't promising a cure. We're not even taking a treatment approach. Treatment is the business of medicine. This is vividly different because we're addressing the root cause foundationally and fully. This is different because we're not saying, hey, we're the answer. We're saying that in your child's neurophysiological system, in your neurophysiological system is the answer. The brain doesn't want to live in anxiety. The brain, as God designed it, it knows that's a very unhealthy place to stay stuck. It's trying to get itself unstuck. All the mechanisms, all the physiology, all the neurology that we need to work with is inside your child's nervous system. What we need to do is find where those subluxations are. We need to find that dysautonomia, that vagus nerve dysfunction, and that nervous system dysregulation. And we do that with our technology. You gotta go to the website and learn all about the Insight Scans. The Insight Scans are going to find this dysregulation, this dysfunction, this dysautonomia. We can find it, we can quantify it, we can get what's called our pattern analysis so we know exactly what's triggering your child's challenges, and we can address those root causes through time and repetition. And that's my very, very, very favorite part of this kind of chiropractic approach to anxiety. There's no treatment. There's no cure. We're not even no, that's not our language. If somebody says that's what we're trying to do, it's because they don't understand anything other than the medical philosophy. This is unique. This is entirely different. This is more aligned with what you want, mom and dad, for your child than anything else, because when you address the root cause, you don't just get short-term benefit. Chiropractic isn't just, get in, get adjusted, and I'll feel better for the day. That may be how some people use chiropractic, but this kind of chiropractic is different. This kind of chiropractic goes all the way down to the real root cause and through time and repetition. So yes, if a child's been struggling with anxiety, and especially if they've been through the perfect storm, like Hannah, we go all the way back to pregnancy, we go all the way back to labor and delivery, we find out that they've been sick and stressed and off track, imbalanced for a long time, it's going to take time and repetition to get them better. But here's the best part I want to close this beast of an episode with. It lasts. The coolest thing about addressing your child's chronic health challenges like anxiety through natural, drug-free, root cause-focused approaches is you're not just getting a Band-Aid. You're not just getting a short-term fix. You're getting long-term improvement to neurophysiological function. You know, this whole time we've talked about nerves that fire together, wire together, and that a child who is overstressed early and often gets stuck into sympathetic dominance. Guess what continued, repetitive, overtime, neurologically focused chiropractic care does? It turns struggling Hannah, anxious Hannah, don't want to go out and participate in life Hannah, into thriving, resilient, empowered, adaptable, ready to take on all that life has with a smile and a healthy, rocking nervous system to adapt through it and thrive with it. My favorite part of the work I get to do is not the bad stuff that goes away. We will celebrate with you like crazy when you report back to us that you found a PX doc, that you got started with care. And you could do that by going to the website, hit up the directory, and get all the information, all the resources, and connection to our directory and our doctors all over the world that do this work that we went way, way deep on in this episode. You can do that on the website. But when you do, I want to leave you with why God called me to do this 90-minute deep dive episode into anxiety and everything else we do with this podcast and our platform. It's to get to the good. Now, I know how simple that sounds. I kind of set that one up like I had some big, fancy, supercalifragilistic words coming out to close this podcast. And I think I still maybe have a few because kids are not meant to struggle. Kids are not meant to live in anxiety. Kids are meant to freaking smile. My kids' smiles is what I live for. My kids' joy is what I live for. My kids going after life and getting to experience head on everything that God cooked up and put forth into it for them is my dream. And it's my prayer and it's my plan, if I'm being honest as well. A little bit of a planner over here, okay? Married one. I don't know that I was naturally one, but I married one, so I is one now. Great English, too, to close this down, huh? But the truth is, on the other side of this storm, on the other side of neurologically focused chiropractic care, is your child's fullest optimal potential. I have been blessed. I'd shared Hannah's story today. I have been blessed to take care of so many Hannahs and Cole's and Francesca's and Tommy's and so many kids who were riddled with anxiety and their life was being shut down and taken from them as a result. And then the world was going to miss out on that life that we so need them to live, because the world is filled with anxiety and the world is filled with exhaustion and depression. And so what we're going to do is, as a generation of parents, is we're going to find these freaking answers, no matter how hard it is, no matter if this is the 53rd podcast about anxiety that you've listened to and you finally found the answers, no matter how many scrolls of Instagram and searches on Google and firing one doctor to hire a different one we need to do, don't stop. You're the freaking hero in this story, mom and dad. You found this. My job is easy. I've been studying this, loving this, doing this, and talking about this forever. So we just bought some cameras and a microphone, and now I do it on a podcast. So my job is easy. My job is joyful. My job is awesome. Because I know that on the other side of doing my job for you and your family and your child, life will be awesome as well. And I hope you're hearing me at the end of this very long episode, because what I want for your family more than anything else in the world is to experience that. And you might need to experience a miracle first, because maybe your child struggles. Maybe all the negative we talked about here is real life. Maybe all the things that you've tried, the longest list ever, thousands of dollars and dozens of doctors, you need one more. And I promise you this, that is the one that will address the root cause like no one else has before. Every child heals differently. Every child heals on a different schedule. Every child went through a different level of the storm and starts at a different time. But I do know this. Every child is ready to heal. Every young adult is ready to heal. Every one of us is designed to heal as well. If today's conversation was me talking to you about you, well, then you take the same step. Go learn about subluxation, sympathetic dominance, vagus nerve dysfunction. Go learn about neurologically focused chiropractic. Go to that directory and find yourself one. This is how we change our perspective. This is how we change our neurophysiology. This is how we change our outcomes in life. And we live by this, what is it? It's a hashtag when you write it on Instagram, but we're going to close it with this. We live by this phrase, this rallying cry on our team all the time, every day, every reel, every video, every post, every podcast episode. We live by the phrase, every kid counts. We came here to find you and find your child. And if we found you in the storm, this is the path out. This is the way out. We really respect you. We really listen to you. We didn't find these answers in the lab only. We found them by listening to you and to your child. And if what we're saying to you, I know you're on the listening end of the way the podcast works now, but if what I'm saying and how I'm saying it was what you needed to hear and the help you needed to find, then I am so thankful to you. And I would be extra 10x even more thankful if you could help me share this with the world. If you could please take the time, and I know I took an hour and a half, maybe some change of your time, to teach you all about the neuroscience granular aspects of anxiety, because you deserve all those details. If you could take the time before you're all done to rate and leave a review of the podcast, that would help us find more people on those platforms. If you could take the time to go to Instagram and find at PX Docs and follow us there, and you could go to Facebook, Dr. Tony and the PX Docs, and you could go to YouTube, PX Docs as well. And if you could go to those places, you could engage with our content, you could comment, you could share, and you could put this podcast and this platform out to all of your moms and dad friends, to all of the providers, the rockstar pediatrics, OT, PT, speech therapists, teachers, social workers, anybody and everybody who you know needs to hear this, will you please take the time to share it? I have teens and I'm in it and I'm living it, and I can see my child go into these challenges and come out stronger on the other side. And I do not love it when I'm in the thick of it, but I do love the other side of it. The resilience, the adaptability, the strength, the fortitude, and the path to a wonderfully happy, non-anxiety-riddled life that I know our kids deserve and can get to with this information from this podcast taken into action. See you on the next one.